which was literally, and I just wanted to be clear to people, was about exploring ideas of things that could be in the final TDM that gets put forward. So we, there was some specific conversation around changing red zones and very specific things. All of those were just ideas or things to be included. So he kind of, he created this kind of big broad brush picture. And then from there, what we should have done was, well, we didn't have enough time because that took so long. Then we would have moved into talking about the principle itself. So what we're going to do now is Jeremy's going to start us off and do some context setting for that second part, and then we'll actually get into talking about the principle. Okay? Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Jeremy Shaw with the Planning Department, and I'm just going to give a quick, like Lisa said, actually, she said it better than I did. So basically, if you were here in April, Jeff Tumlin from Nelson Nygaard, a consultant, came and gave an overview of TDM, or Transportation Demand Management. You'll hear those three letters a lot. And again, it was a breadth of ideas and a lot of things that are going to be explored in that consultant plan. And today we just wanted to talk about how all those ideas relate and intersect with the parameters we're reviewing in this forum. So, So just by way of context, and transportation is such a huge issue. We're not going to be able to tackle every issue in the neighborhood through the reservoir, but we do want to lay out the context and to assure you that many, many other things are going on outside of the CAC meeting, outside of the reservoir process. And so some of the factors that will affect the ultimate transportation requirements for the Balboa Reservoir site are listed on the page here. We have a number of transportation planning initiatives around transit, streetscape going on in the neighborhood. The city has a draft TDM, Transportation Demand Management Ordinance, which I'll get into more in a minute. Their city college has ongoing planning and ongoing transportation part of that planning. The TDM plan, which I'll go into more, the parameters, which are the primary topic tonight that we'll be discussing for Balboa Reservoir. And then ultimately, which come later in the process, that the actual program that goes on the reservoir itself. And when we say program, it means just the specifics, like the actual things you'd expect from a development, the unit types, the mix of units, square feet of commercial development, if that's included, or other non-housing elements, amenities, parking, all the little details. That's kind of what generally I'll refer to when I say program. So just as a, again, if you recall, Carly was here a few weeks ago. There's Carly Payne from SFMTA. She gave a quick overview of all the transportation planning projects in the neighborhood. This is an even quicker overview. Just to kind of jog your memories, there's a lot of transit improvements around the state Balboa Park station area, a lot of improvements to the vehicles and the capacity of the system itself. More specific to the neighborhood, there's Ocean Avenue streetscape improvements designed to maximize pedestrian and bicycle safety and transit access. There's another Ocean Avenue and Geneva Avenue study that has about 30% design level that we're looking for more funds to carry it closer to that 100%. There are other things that more directly relate to the reservoir site, include the Lee Avenue extension, which will be part of some sort of future agreement. And currently, City College has an arrangement with, as part of the land swap with the city, there's an arrangement that they will extend Lee Avenue north. So that's another sort of form of transit and bicycle access that will be provided. Phelan Avenue, we're not going to get into tonight, but we've heard a number of comments, some of which you can see in the response to comments document at the back. And we are working for a process forward for addressing issues on Phelan and still ongoing planning. So there's a lot going on is really the point. And just just a brief intro to Carly's work and a lot of other folks in the city. This TDM ordinance, it's in draft form, includes a TDM menu. It's basically to provide guidance for developers around the city on how to implement transportation demand management, how to get different forms of transportation utilized and in practice and easy to use. It sets the expectation for developers, it provides guidance, and it tells them how the city kind of weighs and evaluates the different forms of TDM that any development process can implement. Which brings us back to this development process, the Balboa Reservoir. I apologize for the atrocious colors. It looks a lot better on my screen, but this process. There we go. So, as Lisa just mentioned, the primary element right now is we're looking at the parameters that go into this request for proposals, right? The RFP, and the idea of the parameters is to set and articulate the community's values and priorities so that any developer proposal that comes to the table is performing to meet those values and achieve those priorities. Later in the process, once we finish the RFP, the developers will submit proposals and we'll go through a selection process. But the point we're really going to focus on today is the parameters, and the idea is to get these goals and get these priorities right, and then we figure out how to implement those goals later on in the process when we understand what proposals are on the table, when we have more time to have community dialogue and design workshops to really dig into those program details that we need to know before we can actually write a TDM plan, a sort of formal, final TDM plan for the reservoir. So today, again, we're focusing on the parameters. Later on in the process, when we have more chance, we'll focus on the community, the design and development program. And only later, once the program is finalized and there's actually a project on the table, then we can really piece out all the TDM measures that need to go to address that development. I want to highlight part of this community dialogue in here, this design workshops and the refinement of the proposal on the table addresses the development program, that's all part of it, but all the other transit and transportation and TDM elements are also part of the dialogue. We have to do these things in tandem. And the way this conversation is informed by, again, all those things that I listed off in that first slide, primary of which is this TDM plan, which looks at the neighborhood level and talks about how the reservoir can interface and coordinate with City College, with the neighborhoods around it. All that informs this discussion later in the process. And then one additional thing I wanted to highlight is that ultimately we have three main entities, right, in the area. We have the reservoir and the future development proposal for that. City College is doing their program. They will have their own independent TDM process as well. That's part of their master plan. And as we've discussed at various times, the neighborhood has parking issues and transportation management issues that need to be addressed. So the intent of the TDM plan is also to tie all those things together, because if they're developed in isolation, they're not going to be as effective. And so the point is the TDM plan serves these sort of two different purposes. One is to inform the RFP and the ultimate reservoir development, but two is also to help with that ultimate implementation of everything going on in the area. And so just to put a finer point on it, what is this plan actually doing? Here are the deliverables. There are various short-term and long-term recommendations, again, for the Balboa area, the neighborhood, which includes the site and City College. There will be a number of implementation measures about how to coordinate between these three entities. There's also something we added, something we discussed with Supervisor Yee, a qualitative assessment of how traffic circulation works in the neighborhood, because we understand that we realize there are a lot of challenges and bottlenecks. So while the TDM plan won't solve those issues, it is the first step to identifying what's the most important problem, and that helps us identify future funds or future capacity to study and ultimately address those. And again, the TDM plan just will offer implementation steps about how to monitor and how to make sure we continue to meet the outcomes and priorities that we've set in the plan as a whole. Just as a reminder again, the plan as a whole, that when I say neighborhood, this is the project area. So can everyone read that in the back? This City College is right here. The reservoir is this green area here. That's what we're discussing tonight. The TDM plan also, when we say neighborhoods, it's also looking at parking policies, circulation issues, and other TDM-related measures to implement in those yellow neighborhoods. Okay, so again, but tonight the parameters focus just on that green area, just on the reservoir. And just as a refresher, they're designed to be the priorities. They're not the ultimate TDM plan. We're not going to get to the final measures for a TDM program because we don't know what kind of development we're serving. If the development program has a certain number of student housing units or a certain number of family housing units, we need to figure that mix out before we can identify the transportation measures that serve those students or serve those families. They need to be done in tandem. That's what comes later in that flowchart. But we know that there are a lot of priorities and we've gotten a lot of feedback on this issue. And so we've identified a certain number of measures that we definitely know we want to see. You can see that in the transportation parameters. We'll get into that in a minute. Some of these surefire measures or that we want the developer to explore include car share membership, transit passes, real-time transit information, bike amenities, and also the sort of outreach and education is a critical component of sort of communication and social elements of getting these measures out there in the public dialogue, and creating awareness is part of it. So that's all already baked into the TDM, into the transportation parameters that we're reviewing tonight, but they don't get us all the way there to the priorities. That is something we need the developer proposal on the table for before we can take it to that next step. And again, we got into monitoring a little bit last time. That's sort of baked into any TDM program. Everything, the city's ordinance and every standard for TDM includes a monitoring program. There are various forms of monitoring and compliance programs that have been used in different development agreements or different developments like the Belvo Reservoir. Here are a couple of examples. The actual percentage targets or the details of those monitoring plans vary based on the development program, which again is something we haven't gotten to yet. So we can't pin down those exact numbers quite yet. That comes, again, as part of the ongoing community dialogue around the development. Yes. So just as a recap, after we get through the RFP, we'll have a lot more of community design dialogue and to really dig into the details. And we wanted to just frame that the level of detail we're at now is actually it addresses the priorities, it has a few of those requirements that we want to make sure we get in there, but it's not going to have every last detail because we can't get to that until we have the final development program to work with.
So you're saying then... So Jeremy, you're saying that the RFP is basically aspirational, and it's very detailed for an RFP. Most RFPs aren't as detailed as this, but it's basically an idea that we're trying to find out what the community wants, what the CAC is trying to come up with to find consensus, and then from that we go on to the real fun, which is dealing with the developer, dealing with the actual where things are going to go, how big is the park going to be, how many units, what kind of, how much family housing, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's correct.
So it's not the be-all and end-all. When we issue the RFP, that's not the end of it at all.
It's really just the beginning, actually.
Okay.
Jeremy, could you explain a little bit more in detail in that second box where it says TDM understanding?
Mm-hmm.
What is the baseline, or what's the floor? What's the floor of what the understanding is going to be?
Well, I think mostly the idea is that the developer needs to demonstrate a mastery of TDM. And we need to have confidence.
Oh, their understanding of TDM overall?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So again, the RFP, like John said, the RFP has a lot of guidance and direction. It, in some cases, has more detail than a typical RFP would. So the developer respondents they have a lot of direction, but we don't know what the program is. So when they propose a development program, whether it's what kind of open space, what kind of student housing or affordable housing, they need to show that they know what TDM is and they know what programs will work with the type of housing or with the type of development that they're proposing.
Okay.
If they don't jive, then that's an issue.
Red flag,
yeah.
Yeah. Other questions?
that.
Yeah, that's good.
Help with the issue.
So let me ask, so does any, just like I just have to clarify the question, does anybody on the CAC have any questions about the process overall? Okay, so are there, so I'm at a facilitations crossroad, which is, does anybody, is this okay as background parameter, and can we now move into the principle, talking about the parameter, or do people have feedback about this? I'd hate to have us spend time, this, we did this as a way to help create the context around the staging of the TDM and how the TDM fits into the actual development of the program by the selected developer. So the question is there anything around this that's not clear for people that would prevent you from being able to move ahead to talk about the parameters?
I just had a question on the map.
So, okay.
I have to go back to the map, but you had the overview.
Yeah, go ahead. And do you want to take the mic? Or do you want to...
The big arrow on the map that you had up there, the big one.
The yellow one?
Yeah, the yellow one. And I understand that there's certain limits to actually setting areas, and there's certain limits to the ability to study areas. But when we're trying to create networks and improve systems, whether it's transit, biking, walking, et cetera, you can't look at something in isolation. So when I see that the highway and the other areas that are more of District 11 and Southern Sign, it's all gray on the right, are not included in this, it seems like you're kind of not including the idea of people walking and getting to the station or getting to this area.
Mm-hmm.
If it becomes an amenity, people will want to get there. And so we want to make sure that people living down here that may want to walk over there have an improved access so they're not taking their cars to get there.
Absolutely. I think I agree with both points. There's only so far, you know, we do have some practical limitations with how far we could extend the plan project area, but you're absolutely right. It's just because of this map does not mean that access to the Balboa Park station is not on the city's agenda. In fact, I would argue, as you well know, Aaron, highly the opposite. And Robert, who's also on the CAC, has been working with us on improving pedestrian access right around here at San Jose and Geneva. There are a number of BART and SFMTA lighting, ADA access, pedestrian safety measures all going around the station. So yes, we're aware. Unfortunately, this study can't do everything, but the consultants are also aware of, and I think we'll be including a part of that plan that addresses the other things going on in the neighborhood.
Now that I think of it, how are you coordinating with other organizations within the community with regard to the Ocean Avenue and the TDM and what your planning
with
process
for which project?
anything dealing with the Ocean Avenue in general vicinity, the transportation planning. Just to clarify that.
Sure.
The reason I'm asking is that I was at an a meeting in the community where there was a general comment that there's no coordination with the other organizations. So.
Fair question, and we've heard comments to that effect as well. And I have to say, from my view, I think since this reservoir CAC has started, the number of coordinating efforts have also like mushroomed. So just as a couple of examples, Robert is, for one thing, Robert, who couldn't attend tonight, but we did talk, he and I talked last week, is on both CACs. And so citizens and citizen advisors who attend those meetings are connected through Robert, as well as through staff. So the MTA staffs that CAC. I communicate with them on a daily basis, just about a number of things, and a lot of them are about Ocean Avenue. With regard specifically to Ocean Avenue, their DPW and the planning department carried out this streetscape improvement process earlier this year.
It's in process. It's in process now, but the planning process was about 2 years ago.
There was another, it started 2 years ago. It finally ended last year, and DPW is executing that. This other piece of Ocean Avenue I'm working on with the TA to identify funding, the transportation authorities, the county
planning. Coordination with the OAA also?
Yeah, and so generally when we have smaller stakeholder meetings, OAA is always on the list. Their participants and members often come to these meetings. Yeah, actually, they're well represented on the CAC. I see all their handouts and materials, so there is a fair amount of communication.
Good. Okay. So any other? So do you have a clarified question?
Just a question.
This seems like a big step. Does this mean that if somewhere down the road we find that the TDM shows something where things have to change drastically rather than be tweaked? Can that happen? Can there be major changes later down the road?
To the reservoir?
To the plant.
To the program.
Yeah, the RFP.
Sure. Let me enter. So which changes down the road to which projects? To the TDM, to the TDM plan?
To the development, based on what we learn about the neighborhoods. For example, if we find that the neighborhoods all of a sudden have gridlock and public transportation isn't going to be able to deal with this, and I'm just giving you a worst case.
Sure.
In some situation like that, what we find out that because the TDM isn't going to be finished until after this all starts, can we change things majorly?
Absolutely. Can you put up the arrows, the flowchart? Sorry. Yeah.
Yes is the short answer. And I think the TDM will, the TDM plan, again, the neighborhood-wide TDM plan will be done this year, okay? Far before any final development program for the site, probably before community design workshops on the site. So there's going to be a lot of this stuff, that middle box, happening after the TDM plan and all the data that is ascertaining and assessing as you took in a survey is in and compiled. Does that help? Does that answer your question?
Well, I think you all nodded, so it means things can change if they need to.
You know what I'm struck by is clearly I'm not a developer, a planner, or have any expertise in this area, right? I'm a layperson. And what it almost seems like is these draft parameters, and the principles with the draft parameters is really about giving a general idea of what we'd like to see on the 17-acre parcel to see who's going to take a bite, who might be interested in it. So you got to be somebody who wants to do work with sustainability, and you want to be able to have architecture that's interesting, and that we want to have different levels of income levels satisfied, and we want to have a big park, and we want to have some retail. So we've kind of given an idea of what the footprint could look like or what the variables are within it. But the reality is that it's just a general idea. And in fact, that once, and the developer has to say, yeah, that looks interesting to me, or man, I wouldn't touch that one with a 10-foot pole because they put so many guidelines just in the original principles that it would be too hard to do. And I think it just struck me just now that it's like you're setting like a general frame of we're not building a hockey field, right? We're building housing and parking and having something on this that's going to be a unifying factor for the neighborhoods. And then once you get the developer who's interested in doing that and can put together the most compelling ideas around the nirvana that we've created with the principles, then you actually start to dig into it and say, okay, what's this really going to look like? And then by that point, we'll have a lot more information. The TDM will be done. We'll have a much clearer idea. You know, Jennifer, I was thinking that, you know, one thing that may happen is, let's say we have a just, hopefully, let's all say aspirationally, and that may come true, that we have a 40% boost in students enrolling at City College. So that has a huge implication then on what's going to have to happen there. But that's not going to happen in the principles. That's going to happen once we actually have the data about it, and then that's going to inform what can or can't be built. And I think this notion of this stage with the community design process, that's a very, very malleable, flexible, developmental stage of the project. Almost it should have like dashes around it, right, instead of a box, just to say there's a lot of work to be done there to get you to what's going to actually eventually be built. So I just want to offer that as a way to think about this, to say we're giving you a general size of what the red box looks like, but the reality is that a lot of work is going to be, does the red box have doors, what kind of red will go in it, all those kinds of things will be as part of that next piece. So So thank you for that. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like to open it up to actually talk about the transportation parameters. So what I can do is we'll start at this end and we'll hear feedback from the CAF first. And then I think is that the order we're gonna do it in? Yeah. And then we'll hear from our participants. So who'd like to start?
Well, I think in general it's a really good document. I can't find really very much to argue with. There's a lot of it brings up a lot of thoughts with me, many of which will come at that community design process. For instance, transit isn't really discussed in here. I'm not sure if that's because it doesn't really have to do directly with the area. But, you know, Muni doesn't, I think we're gonna have to have more than just an extra, more frequency on the 43. We might have, I think Muni really needs to do some planning on this. And it's not something that Muni's good at. They're not good at planning. They're good at, they're good at service planning, but they're not good at land use planning. And we need to help them, or something has to happen there to improve Muni and access to the site and to City College. I like the idea of Clipper cards for the residents and also for City College students. That's off topic, but I think that there are a lot of things we can do pending the TDM that would help bicycling, improving. Right now, this area is, I ride a bike. I've been riding a bike for 35 years, but I'm intimidated by this intersection right here on a bicycle and the intersection down at San Jose Avenue with all those streetcar tracks that can pull you down. That needs to be part of the plan, is to create more access by alternative transportation. Car share, we already have one car share pod in the neighborhood, but if there's going to be housing right here, we probably could use quite a bit more. Bike share also. Bike share has been growing. It's about to double in size in San Francisco, but it's growing in concentric circles, and we need to have a chute that comes out to the BART station. And I think maybe one station here and two or three in the reservoir and two or three on the campus would really do a lot to create access for people to come without cars. Car share. And of course, walking. It's we're right now working on the streetscape, new streetscape designs for, or implementing new streetscape schemes for Ocean Avenue. But walking to that BART station, and I noticed the BART station isn't on the TDM list area, but it's just, it's dehumanizing to walk to the BART station right now. It's just not, there's no dignity in walking. You feel like a rat scurrying in the gutter. And it shouldn't feel like that to walk to BART. It really should, you know, and we're depending on people in this community to, if everybody brings a car into this housing, even if it's only 500 units, if we bring in two cars per unit or a car per unit, we're screwed. We're just not going to be able to move on the streets. So we have to create some way that it's just friendly to walk to BART, at least. That's like a minimum requirement. Wider sidewalks, maybe some trees. I mean, we're working on that at the moment, but I mean, even what's going on right now is not enough. And a reconfiguring of this intersection right here to allow bicycles to get through safely, and for the buses to be more efficient and crosswalks to be more efficient. If you want to get to the BART station, you have to cross twice to get over to the BART station. And parking, I really like the idea of decoupling the parking from the rent. So when you go to get an apartment, you can choose to get parking. You pay extra for it. I think a lot of people will choose not to, because they'll say, BART's right down the street. There's a K Ingleside. There's a 43. I can walk. Maybe I can do my shopping in the neighborhood. Maybe I just don't want a parking spot. But it will leave the option for people who do want to drive to have that parking spot. And parking is, as we learned from Jeffrey Tumlin last week, it's really expensive, and it takes up a lot of space. It's between 45, you know, the Tiffany Gardens at Mission and 30th, where Good Frickin' Chicken is, that costs $75,000 per parking spot. If we were to replace all the parking spots, if we were to build one-to-one parking for 500 units, we're talking about, I figured it out, we'd be talking $22 to $36 million for parking in that area. That's just, that's outrageous. We can't do it. That money and space could be used for more and better housing, open space, amenities, and it wouldn't be generating the traffic that we just can't have in this neighborhood. And I know a lot of people are thinking, is this possible in real life? And it is, because it's happening all over town. There's a building at 22 Franklin in the pipeline. It's got 14 two-bedroom units, 14 one-bedroom units, and 7 studios. It's got 1,800 square feet of ground floor commercial space and no parking. There's the Octavia area. It's the Octavia area plan calls for 1 to 4 parking. So one parking spot for every 4 units. And if you want to get more parking, you have to get a variance. And even right here at 1110 Mercy Housing, right next to the supermarket, that is 72 units and four parking spots for deliveries. So it happens, and it can be done, and it's functioning. And that building filled up and didn't generate any traffic in the neighborhood. So that's basically it. I strongly advocate for the 0.5. I know there's some conflict in the neighborhood and on this committee about it, but I really think 0.5 to 0.5 parking, one parking spot for every 2 units, is reasonable. And I would actually like to see it go lower, but it's a compromise. I think it's I would have to really strenuously back that. And finally, you know, they say to plan is human and to implement is divine. We have to have safeguards that ensure that the trip generation actually is what we say it's going to be. And if it goes over, we have to have, as Tumlin last month was saying, we have to have some kind of fail-safe to make sure that if things go wrong, we can straighten it out. And I'm not sure what that is. I'm not an engineer, but we'll figure it out. I talk too much.
That's good. Thank you.
So I'm going to actually read Robert Mildauer's statement that he prepared since he's unable to be here tonight. So traffic circulation and parking at and around the proposed new neighborhood at the unused reservoirs is arguably the most significant of those under discussion by this CAC. On the face of it, if one envisions a 500-unit villa at the site, a number previously used for illustrative purposes by staff,
sorry,
is clear.
Can you get a little closer to my
microphone? Sure. Sorry. It is clear that traffic, circulation, and parking in and around the reservoir area will be stressed further than today's conditions. This is a common complaint heard consistently at both bodies at CACs at the respective meetings. And just as a reminder, Robert sits on both CACs. When CCSF recovers from its 30% reduction in enrollment now that its accreditation crisis appears to be settled, the stress will be greater still. The revised transportation development parameters are, generally speaking, full of state-of-the-art, innovative ideas and concepts reflecting current best practices around a goal of encouraging residents to get out of their cars, onto their feet, bicycles, and local transit networks. Will they work? Good questions. There are myriad of elements in the revised transportation parameter, and not one is a magic pill. Some have varying degrees of complexity, and others are of limited duration. Taken as a whole, and if the whole were to be the best mix possible when held up to the mirror of the impending TDM, and assuming that the whole effort, once implemented, was very successful, it would still not be a winning argument or a good bet to conclude that traffic circulation and parking upon completion of the housing project would be anything but further deteriorated beyond present conditions. It is difficult to get beyond this essential truth, and trying to convince the public otherwise seems disingenuous.
As a CAC member, I'm also having trouble believing that market rate units leased or sold to buyers above 100% AMI will be satisfied with less than one dedicated parking space. This after is, after all, still the suburban, still the urban frontier of San Francisco, where existing residents and prospective new buyers' parking expectations continue to lean more suburban than close in urban. It makes me wish that something substantial could be done that would contribute towards meaningful infrastructure improvement, supporting alternate people and not simply traffic circulation in and around the project area. The notion here goes beyond providing discounts on public transit or something like that, ideas that may be decent ones, but a more bricks and mortars nature that John Q. Public will see every day and know that they came about because of the Reservoir Housing Project. The infrastructure vision being expressed here would need to be built not only with the Reservoir Project, but outside and around the project area and connecting the housing complex on the Thielen Unity Plaza bus loop and beyond to the Balboa Park Station. The vision is for something distinctive with an enduring quality that would clearly link the Reservoir Housing to our local district's regional transit station. 1 year public comment after public comment at CAC meetings, nearly screaming about the abysmal, intimidating walking environment from City College to Balboa Park Station. They seem to implore, can't the city at least do something about that? Every building era throughout San Francisco's history has left its signature on the urban geography. Wouldn't it be significant and substantial if one of the signature statements and outcomes stemming from the Reservoir Housing addressed the problem of improving pedestrian circulation to Balboa Park Station in a highly visible and durable way?
I have to reiterate and reinforce in much of what Robert Mulbacher has said. I want to say just on a personal level, walking to BART or even coming back from BART is just a real difficult. I do it on a regular basis, but it could be so much better, and it's very difficult. I do want to thank the planning department for listening to the public with regard to the use of parking and off hours and recognizing commuters in the parameter of, is it 2D? I'm sorry, 3D. And the fact that there is going to be some kind of, I think, of the synergy with regard to being able to utilize parking for individuals who wish to commute by BART downtown. But there is a serious concern with regard to the residents of Westwood Park. Westwood Park, as I said previously, have a great support for CCSF City College. It is an integral part of our community and our lives. And not to have some kind of plan, absolute plan, for replacement parking that is currently used, we just can't go forward without that. It is a direct conflict with what we have as a as a neighborhood indicated as one of the primary principles. We must have a larger transportation infrastructure that needs to be planned, funded, and implemented before any kind of development can be started, and that must be a component in any kind of parameter that we have. We also, as far as Westwood Park is concerned, we reiterate, with those individuals who are going to be paying for market rate housing, are they going to want to have zero parking places? It's a question. There's also a concern that within the parameters, although I think it's implied possibly, but not specifically stated, that there needs to be and specifically address the needs of seniors, families, the disabled, and those that are not necessarily going to be able to utilize the options that are presented in bicycles and such like that. And that goes to the principal parameter that the residents of Russell Park have made very clear to us in more than 90% of their responses, and that they want one-to-one parking absolutely. So within these parameters, there are a number. Specifically, there's a direct conflict with the principles that the Westwood Park residents are supporting, specifically a conflict with Principle 2A and 3B. With that, though, I understand and I wish you appreciate the fact that there has been some movement as far as recognizing commuters of a different... Sorry.
Appreciate that there has been
some movement. submitted. On the other hand, if we have had, if we have a consensus vote tonight, I would have to say this is a no-go on transportation.
So I just wanted to speak on a personal note. So I take public transportation pretty regularly. I actually live in Oakland, and so I BART every day. And sometimes I actually would prefer to drive, but it's just the traffic. And I think one thing that I don't see come up is public transportation is expensive. It's actually more expensive to take public transportation than to drive. And also time is money. And sometimes it takes a lot longer to take public transportation, which is why I'll sometimes choose to drive. So that's something that's a concern for me, because there are a lot of, I think, City College students fall in working class, sometimes lower socioeconomic background, and I'm just concerned about if we lose all these parking spots, what is that going to mean for them? And so I would echo kind of what you were saying as well.
Yeah, I want to touch on some of what Christy said also, because I live in the neighborhood and I walk to BART all the time and I take public transportation. And I went to City College myself, and it's really hard to walk from City College to the BART station, or from Ocean Avenue even to the BART station. I think lighting is a big issue, and that's what people have been addressing at meetings that I've been hearing, that, you know, it's scary for them because the lighting is not feasible for a lot of these people. And sometimes I have to go from City College to BART, and it's late. So that can be a scary thing for some people.
Oh, it's nice going last for once. So I appreciate everybody's comments, and I guess I get the opportunity to respond a little bit too, because I take public transport a lot, and I understand the cost part of it. But also, I think there's one thing that you have to recognize, and maybe because I used to practice law, and I remember double billing when I was flying to one client working on something. So there's you can get stuff done on public transportation that you cannot do while you're in a car. So that's one thing. I walked here today. I live over near Santa Rosa and San Jose, and it's an okay walk. It's worse to come up this way. It's worse to come up San Jose up Ocean. I've also biked that way. I used to try to ride my bike to work at San Francisco State. That intersection is horrible. Cars come speeding off. I probably don't need to recite all these things because you already know, but the one thing that we haven't really acknowledged is the lack of planning that's gone into how we have the current situation. I mean, it's kind of just grown and been added here and there, and no one's really thought about it. And that's why City College, with this new master planning, is really focusing on having a new face out on Ocean Avenue, reconfiguring how it looks to anyone walking by, driving by, bicycling, and getting into City College. So what I'm looking at is a very holistic view. And this is not easy. This is not easy whether you're advocating for cars or bikes or anything else, because we have to integrate where City College is going and what City College's needs are, especially with our anticipated enrollment growth and the night classes and everything. At the same time, the Balboa Station, so the Balboa Park BART station, and changes that are coming to that area to be also configured with City College's, and then now the Balboa Reservoir. So we have a very, very tall order. And I honestly don't see how we can have a one-to-one car ratio. I'm sorry, I just don't understand that at all. I mean, I don't understand how we can do it. Maybe there might be some mechanical way to put cars on lifts or something, but I don't see how we can do that with what we need to do here. So that's what I'm looking at. I'm also looking at making sure we have parking for the students who absolutely do need to park, and for the families and disabled students and seniors, but also that we just keep in mind that we can't do what we've been doing. There's no way to really do that. And residents of Westwood Park and Sunnyside will probably understand this too, that there's so much congestion here. I bypassed it all when I walked today, but I just see how many cars are stacked up, and it's very, very difficult. So what we do, and I'm hoping we do something very innovative for everybody, to make it easier for the neighborhoods around here to be able to access any amenities at City College, to get out to BART more easily, or even driving. So if we have less cars around here, that maybe you'll be able to just cut right through and go wherever you need to go. So again, I guess I'm only offering the solution that we really need to take all of these things into account, and that we can't go on as we have been going on.
So I think that, as listening to everyone's comments, I was thinking about how wealthy San Francisco is as a city and how much money there is, and traveling to other parts of San Francisco and seeing how well-heeled roads are, just how nice other parts of San Francisco are, Octavia, and just how we've done a good job in other parts of the city of creating nice, you know, Valencia Street. I mean, there's just been a lot of work to create streets that are much more community-oriented. And the irony is, if you were to do a count of how many people go from BART to this neighborhood on foot, it's probably is a very large percentage, and probably there's an inverse relationship to the quality of the walking experience. And so I think that, so I wholeheartedly agree with everyone that, you know, part of this is, you know, we talked about with one of the other principals, the idea of could you have a sustainable trolley that's making a solar powered self-driverless car, making up all these words for it, but that it was on a loop that people could be on, and how do we actually envision something that would be that actually turns this into more of a neighborhood instead of an off-ramp extension of a freeway, which is exactly what it feels like now. So I think that the principal really needs to underscore that, because I think that we all feel very strongly about the implications, because I also think that it would be a disservice to the new potential residents to not be able to have something that's vital for everybody. So that's my first piece of feedback. My second piece of feedback is that I'm of two minds. I've got the aspirational mind, and then I've got the pragmatic mind. My aspirational mind says, I want to be with you, John, and go to 0.5 parking. And then my pragmatic mind is, well, when they find out it's going to cost them an extra $10,000 a year for parking, they're going to keep their car, and they're going to park on my street. And that's the sad, maybe, that's me not seeing the cup as half full. So what I'm struggling with is, how do we figure out the right ratio that gets us to be able to attract middle-class families to be able to stay, who probably have to have one car, and at the same time have units where you don't have to have a car, and ideally that none of them are going to park on Edna Street, right? Being a little silly about it, but like, how do we get that balance? And that's the thing that I feel like, I don't know that we could use this project as a petri dish test. Let's see if it works. Because if it doesn't work, it's just going to have profound implications for traffic and congestion. And Jennifer, when you were speaking earlier, you were talking about, well, what happens if we learn something, and then what do we do as a result of that? And can we change? That's great on the early stages of things, but once things are built, there's not going to be room, and when the Performing Arts Center is built and everything is built out, there's going to be a lot less wiggle room. The last thing I would add is that thinking about the future of City College and it growing back to where it should be and needs to be as it supports our city's youth, our young adults and older adults, and the collective role that learning plays, especially as we think about re-educating workforce and workforce development issues. I also feel like there's land that's a part of the City College site that at one point there was a parking structure that was being proposed as part of the last plan that was done that's not happening, and that got struck because they didn't have the money for it. So part of me is wondering too is, what's the relationship of
City College owning its parking requirements for its students, separate from it being on this site, but as part of the site overall. So I don't know how to think about what that cooperative relationship should look like, because I think that also gets at it. So so that's my that's my feedback to the parameters. So with that, let's open it up to public comment.
Are there any responses you want?
Do you want responses from you guys now? Sure, sure. Or do you want to go with the...
Let's go
to public comment. Let's go to public comment and then do a wrap. Okay, great.
Just a reminder that in your the parameters here on the transportation, there's that still that parenthetic thing.
Fixed 3C, yeah.
Yeah, it's also there. And I always have to have something to hand out. I found something, my house is full of boxes, and so I discovered when we did the land swap in 1991 after this similar issue, and I'll pass this around to you, has some information. But what I really wanted to point out, I don't think I've ever discussed this and people say other things, and that's when I started here 50 years ago, I was told very clearly that the school is positioned the way it is to welcome folks from the Pacific Rim into San Francisco, hence the science hall on the top of the hill, which you can see from boats and from airplanes, and I've seen some postcards to that effect, that the welcoming was to the world. So it somewhat disturbs me if we make a whole shift of something, because that's a lovely vision, actually, that San Francisco welcomes the world. And we're central to that, because we are the only really college of this town, and unfortunately for the neighbors, that's why it'd be nice to have a nice performing arts center so we can get back to you all, because, yeah, you have the largest institution in the state of California right in the middle. And that's not true of any place else in San Francisco, even. And the centers are smaller, much smaller, in acreage. And even at that, we're the most crowded campus around. So, yeah. But the thing about the vision, I think we can have two entrances, that's, I guess, what I'm saying. Of course, coming off the BART, much better. We have to have better walkways. But I would hate to lose what I was indoctrinated in, is that lovely building, which is absolutely visually stunning when you come from the ocean, as a welcome San Francisco to the world. I think we should keep that. And here's that.
Laura Fraga, Westwood Park. I just wanted to, first before I forget, somebody mentioned have mechanical lifts for cars, and my understanding is that is exactly what's happening at the Ocean and Miramar development, is that they have a two-story garage and that they have elevators for the cars. Again, I want to say what some of these people have said, my impression of City College. When I was a City College student, I didn't have a car. I used the bus, but there were a lot of people driving. And I wasn't a single mom. I didn't have kids. And I was working, but it was still very, very difficult. And I can't imagine having any kind of children that you have to take responsibility for, or an elder, and having to work and ride a bus to City College. I think it'd be impossible. So again, there has to be some kind of plan to replace on some level, that parking. And then along that, it's 3B. I think back to the one-to-one and replace, to a large extent, City College parking. And I think having a maximum of 0.05 is, in my opinion, bad. And the way it's set up, the way that sentence reads, with family unit only being allowed the one parking space, and then 1 to 4 for student, but it doesn't talk about all the types of units in between that. Mm-hmm. So hypothetically, with a maximum of 5 units, 0.5. The way this is written, it could end up being 0.15 or 0.2, depending on the ratio of family units to other units, because it isn't addressed in here how much parking other types of units would have.
I like to disagree. I'm a walker. I have never owned a car, and I'm still alive. I come from a different country where we have neighborhoods where there are no cars. Now, if you have a water reservoir down here and you have some Mercy buildings there, they park in the water reservoir at night and they get out by 6:45 until 8. And they walk and they drive up slowly as if it is a funeral procession in order to turn into field. That is not what was meant to be. If you live without a car, if you are financially not strong enough to buy your own house, maybe we should give the people an opportunity to save. A car costs more than $3,000 to maintain per year. And why should we not be avant-garde in San Francisco if the European cities can do that? But I have a request. If you want to include old people and people with children, you cannot put the stops way far out by 200 yards and say, go to the next corner and transfer. That does not work. And that has happened during the last 5 years. And the people who have done that in the government of rearranging stops are the ones who do not walk. That are the ones who do not take public transportation. They couldn't care less if I have to walk for a stop and a half. And if you buy new buses, the buses have to have shock absorbers because they are so hard to ride. If you have back problems, it is deadly. So please remember those three things.
Francie Lofrano, Westwood Park. Just a few comments about various things that were talked about. I feel unbundling is going to create a situation where people who own cars are just going to opt to save some money because already the rents are expensive, so they're going to opt to save money and park the cars in the neighborhood. So I don't think unbundling is necessarily a good idea. As far as the CCF parking, I think it's especially critical that we maintain this parking for City College, especially for these evening people. I mean, I've taken classes at both daytime and nighttime, and I live in Westwood Park, and when I took a day class, I would walk. But at nighttime, I actually drove, because it's not safe, okay? And so I would actually drive, you know, however many blocks and park, because I felt I was safer driving in my car than taking the bus or walking through the neighborhoods. The other side is, thing is, this side of the city is actually kind of a suburban area, which somebody actually addressed. And this is not necessarily a destination like downtown where everything's at your fingertips. So people tend to want cars because they're driving somewhere. You're going to drive to Stonestown, or you're going to, you know, drive to Daly City or whatever. I mean, you're not, there's not that much shopping here at this point. You got a Whole Foods, but if you want to go to Safeway and do like a lot of shopping, you're going to get your car. You're not going to do that on a bus. And a lot of talk has been made about millennials. Well, I'm part of the baby boom generation, and that's a huge demographic. Okay, I've got an aging mother who there's no way I could bring her on a bus. I can barely get her in my car. Okay, so people with kids. I have neighbors who have children. Both these people, my husband and wife, have cars. They drive their kids places. They're on a fast-track schedule. They both work. It's just unrealistic to think people are going to just suddenly get out of their cars and walk everywhere and ride bikes everywhere. Public transportation was noted that it's expensive and it takes too long. I totally agree.
And with the increase in enrollment in CCSF, it's going to just increase, create more demand for parking. And finally, as somebody who rides Muni, you know, I have to say that safety could be improved on Muni. I ride during the day, and I've encountered many of problem situations on the buses. On the 43 is the one I ride. And I've been on the K Engel side, going downtown, taking the bus, had some very bad experiences. So it's great to want people to go on the bus, but it's going to have to, safety's going to have to be improved, because nobody's going to want to ride the bus when you're getting attacked.
Aaron Lupin, District 11, I would really second the comments made by Mulbauer in his letter. I think there's some very positive ideas that can come from it. And I think we have a lot of planners and engineers, hopefully some more designers involved in terms of the overall concept that can come from this. And I think that's what's key. That, you know, everybody stays focused on the two sites here, and they kind of forget all the other things that could be involved in solutions here. And I think the connectivity bridging aspect of it, we have an old bridge out there that looks like a lot of people hate how it looks and how it operates, but it serves a function. And when you think about new designs that people have implemented in cities, whether it's like Bernard Tschumi Park de la Villette, or if you look at the skyline in New York City, there's a lot of different ways to come up with ideas and solutions, whether it's parking or how we actually get better access and connectivity. And the principle, one of the items I wrote on principle number two, improve the experience of accessing and utilizing. And that's what I think is part of the wording that has to go in there to get people to really prioritize their mindset to using their feet, using their ability to get to a place without having to use a car. We really have to change the mindset. And in order to do that, you have to provide them with something that they're going to be wanting to go to, whether it's a skyline type project or whether it's something else that might actually help in the connection and bridging of these areas. One other thing was in the principles, there was an item there which and when you hear TDM and levels of service and all these other issues, the one thing I saw there was 60% automobile mode share. And that right away set off some alarms to me, because I know that, you know, the city's looking at different options for car share and other ways of maybe getting federal government grants to study different things. And somebody mentioned a Petri dish. This is not a Petri dish. This is a dense urban city with a lot of congestion, a lot of problems physically. So how do we solve that? We don't just start implementing little solutions like Google buses, Uber, or Lyft and think that's going to solve it. And I hope that that's not the solution that they're actually heading towards here, that we're actually going to come up with a solution that addresses the community's concerns and not just the business aspect of the city.
My name's Corey Smith. I'm with the San Francisco Housing Action Coalition. Also kind of a personal story. The first time I ever came to a meeting here was my first kind of meeting period when I joined the organization. And I remember I came with one of my coworkers, a gal, and we took Bart down and then we walked over. And I remember that walk and thinking, this isn't necessarily close. And she lives in Oakland and I live up in the Heat. And upon leaving, I was going to take a lift back to my house. And she was going to hop on Bart. And she said, there's no way I'm walking back to Bart at 10 o'clock at night by myself at that point. And I thought that was just kind of an interesting observation. So obviously improvements, I think they've been well documented. In terms of the overall kind of parking ratio deal, I do like how the city pointed out different ratios for different units, where studios are different than two or three bedrooms. I think that most people agree that a three-bedroom household is going to have different needs than a single-bedroom studio, especially if those single-bedroom studios are designed to attract City College students. I would hope that they wouldn't take a car over there, but my generation can't be lazy at times. So. And then lastly, John, I mean, for your research, well-documented all the way around, I tweeted at you, commending you for it. Across the city, one-to-one parking ratio is really excessive compared to all the different developments that we're seeing. It's really, really expensive. It means that there are going to be a lot more cars. I hear you, Lisa, you're kind of between, well, if they don't have a parking spot, are they going to drive? Or are they going to park in my neighborhood and kind of have to balance that? But around the city, we're not really seeing one-to-one anywhere anymore. It's just the way that it's going. So.
Hi, Jennifer from Sunnyside.
I guess first we, I want to let you know we appreciate the many changes to the parameters and responses to questions that indicate that our comments have been considered and incorporated, and we thank the Planning Department and OEWD for that, and to the CAC. We still have some concerns and would like to continue to monitor the process. One area of concern in the Q&A document on page 5 of 12 is the statement regarding queuing on Phelan Avenue, that much of the signalization and street is designed to maximize pedestrian and bicycle safety in an area with a lot of both activities. It is not SFMTA's plan to revert bike lanes or pedestrian safety measures. However, some congestion could be addressed by removing street parking to add turn pockets, turn lanes. And so we would like to suggest if a dedicated bicycle lane is incorporated into the Balboa Reservoir RFP, then we don't understand why the bike lane on Phelan cannot be reverted back to a lane of traffic. An extra lane of traffic could be used to augment the existing lane in the direction of greatest congestion, similar to other traffic minimizing efforts in other parts of the Bay Area. Short turning lanes already exist, and we request that the city keep the option available of providing an additional lane to handle expected future increased congestion. Also, on Principle 2E, if Lee Avenue is to be the route out of the reservoir for bicycle traffic, and if it is to be a dedicated bicycle route, which we don't know at this point, please ensure there's some signal to warn bicyclists they're entering an area with trucks and other motor vehicles. It's pretty evident. I thought we'd mention it. Thanks.
Hi, Ray Coots from Sunnyside. And I would just like to make a few comments relative to what I heard tonight with the CAC. You have definitely laid it out there that this is a very complex problem we have to deal with. There's so many issues at stake here. One of the ones being City College is a major one. And we need to be sure that we are planning around that being at its peak enrollment, not what it is today. And I'm afraid that the TDM study is going to look at what we have today instead of assuming another 30% or more in the future. I'd also like to third my comments, or Aaron, you know, Aaron seconded, I third what Robert Milbauer was saying about a vision for this area. We do know that if it is going to be this aspirational utopia of a place that people want to come to, people from other parts of the city are going to want to come here. And how do we deal with that as a major one? Additionally, we talk about this document, and I see it's full of aspirations. And back to Lisa's comments about it being pragmatic or being pragmatic, how do we balance those? I can see very much that, yes, I could do without a car. I've got one, so I'll use it. It is cheaper on a per-trip basis. But for the life of the car, it's more expensive. But that's where you have to make that shift in the mindset. So I can go both ways, but it's because I grew up with the car, right? So I have, and I have lived in neighborhoods where it is less than a one-to-one ratio of unit. My first place of dwelling in San Francisco, there was no parking. I figured it out. I did without for a while, and then I needed one. So it can happen. It's not easy. It's what people are used to. Finally, I just want one more comment. We talk a lot about infrastructure, but we don't talk about those services that people need and need access to easily, immediately in the neighborhood. For example, San Francisco School District uses a lottery system. You don't know your child is going to be in Sunnyside School District over here. Are they going to be clear across town? How do I get them there? It's not a bus service. So there's other issues that face families that we have to deal with in addition to this, as well as senior care, as well as medical care, etc. Thank you.
Thank you. Bernstein, District 11. So, on the box, on the, so we're talking about the updates to transportation development. Right? So in the box, you know, my comment earlier was about the nature of the TDM strategy, and I was saying that my understanding was that it was, you know, a way of controlling or mitigating rather than assessing what the true needs are. I see yet again the intent of the Balboa Area TDM plan is to study the neighborhood cohesively in order to minimize transportation demand impacts from a potential Balboa Reservoir development. I don't see how that really follows up on what you said about the TDM not being about too many negatives.
Okay, so let me take it, and then you guys can correct me when I'm incorrect, okay? That you have to think about it as having two components. The first component
What's
is...
What's the subject of
the TDM. I'm responding to your point that you raised earlier. So in order to minimize transportation demand impacts, that's the final outcome. But to minimize those impacts, you have to understand how many students are driving. All of the different pieces have to go into it so that they can come up with recommendations that will create, that will optimize whatever the final program, using the planning terms, of how many housing units will be built, how big the park is, all of those different components. So the outcome is to minimize the negative impact of transportation of congestion of cars, but in order to do that, you have to understand all the inputs to get there. So this is really the outcome of TDM overall, is to make sure that it is going to minimize the amount of impact of what's going to happen with the development. But in order to do that, we have to understand all the variables that go into it. So we're not going into it with a mindset of, oh, we're going to give everybody red zones and we're going to give everyone a car. Like, you have to understand what the variables are going to be to say, okay, so this is what it looks like. We have to provide at least this many parking spaces for City College students. And we're going to need to do these types of programs to create incentives for people to use bicycles. Or what someone was saying about expanding the bicycle program, they're doing it in concentric circles. Maybe we need to have a bicycle route that follows part of the 43 route. I'm making this up. But the idea is to make sure that we're creating, that the program that's going to be finalized around what happens with the site is going to make sure that we don't, that we take into consideration all of the current demands and minimize the future demands based upon what we know is the current state, plus probably 30% for City College to go back up, and whatever the program is going to be in terms of how many units are going to be developed and so on. Is that, I don't know if that's clear. Does that not make sense? Because you're giving me the questioning look. I can see the question.
No, I...
Mark, on your... maybe planning team people, can anybody explain it more clearly than that?
No, I realize that there are a lot of uncertainties, and I appreciate your outlining what the goal is meant to be.
Is there language that you think that should be different that would do a better job of expressing that? Would that be helpful? And you don't have to, if you want to think about it.
Yeah, no, I just don't know
yeah.
what the, I guess I don't understand how the process, I'll have to see what we find the process of this analysis is, making sure that it doesn't leave out too many areas, that it covers everything. It does say cohesively, and there's something I read about, and it will affect this, and it would affect the planning department, and maybe this might be a good place to bring it up. I was just reading that today there was some measure introduced in the legislature. I don't have the number yet, but apparently what it would do is allow developers to be removed from local planning controls if they include some minimal amount of low-cost housing in their developments.
5%.
I'm sorry? 5%. Yeah, I've heard as low as 5%. But
yeah, so you know, let's get back to you on that. So that let's do the research to see what that
looks like.
Yeah.
I guess
someone
will
want
to respond to this.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. So
there's a couple pieces of state legislation that sort of answer the description we just heard. One has been referred to as of right zoning. So if you propose a housing project in zoning and you have a certain amount of affordable housing, you get to have a more streamlined approval process. The other piece is called a density bonus. And neither of those two apply to this site because it's currently zoned public, not for housing. So you're going to see a lot of reporting about those two items, and you're going to say, wait a minute, all that stuff about process isn't going to happen now? That does not apply to this site. I want to make that as clear as I can.
I'm happy to talk with anybody about those legislations afterward, by the way.
He was more than.
Thank you. So the planning team, does anybody want to respond, provide any feedback based upon what we've discussed so far tonight?
Sure.
Kate, in your comments, you referenced two of the parameters in particular that you found trouble. You said 2A and 3B. Can you explain what about 2A was part of that comment? Mm-hmm. 3B, I assume, was the parking issue.
It was the 60. Yes, it is the 60. It was the 60%.
Kate, can you take that mic, please?
If
I talk too fast.
No, you just
slap.
I
was quoting 240 words. 240 words of it myself. It's a 60% automobile mode share. Yeah,
what is the, yeah.
Right.
What is the question or objection?
It's two.
And just to clarify for people in the audience, it's something we talked about at the TDM meeting. Auto mode share is the share of total trips that are made by the single driver or the private automobile. It's not auto, it's not car sharing. It's not saying that we're going to have 60% in car sharing. It's just saying we're going to try to get 40% of the trips to not be car trips.
For a resident? For a resident?
For the people at the project.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So that, so then, which number is high?
The goal is 60%.
60% is too high, you think?
They'll drive more.
So the automotive share will be higher than 60% if you think people will drive more?
Yes.
Yes.
So it's too low.
The general consensus of the board and the neighborhood, yes.
That's too low.
It'd be too low. 60% of the rides, 60% of all trips are rides, and I think people are going to drive more.
No. You're going to be driving more.
So the 60% would then rise, which means 60% is too low.
So let's take a step back. So let's think about this parameter, because what it is meant to do what a lot of people are talking about with the Petri dish, is saying, if you read the parameter, what it says is, we're going to have a target for how much people will drive. And we've heard all these anecdotal things about some people need cars and some people don't. And what we've said many times is we need to make it so that people that need to drive can drive. But the way to improve congestion is to find people that don't need to drive other ways to go.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we're setting this target of saying hopefully 60% of the trips are cars and we find a way to do 40% other ways for the people that can do other ways. And the parameter goes on to say we're going to monitor that. And if it's not hitting that, we're going to change what we're doing. It's not going to be a Petri dish where it's too late to change it. We're going to change what we're doing to try to get to that target, because we see that as a key way of limiting congestion elsewhere. So the reason I'm asking this question is it feels like your objection to it is opposite what you and your constituency wants to see happen.
Yep.
Interesting. Perhaps it needs to be clarified.
Perhaps it needs to be clarified.
So
we'd be happy to do that. I just want to make sure that what I just explained makes sense in the context of what you were concerned about.
Okay.
What he's just saying, what I'm reading, is that you're saying that maximum 60% parties, and then 40% would be non-parties.
Correct.
Trips.
Number of trips total.
So you're saying if you're for parking, you're probably for a maximum of a higher number of automobiles. So you'd be for 80% as the target.
So can I ask, can we do like a really basic math? I'm a resident. I take 10 trips. If it's 60%, six times I used my car, four times I didn't?
Correct. And I guess the goal of, to the point that was made from the audience about if you're for parking, I guess what we're saying is setting that target higher means more cars on your roads.
No, that might be realistic. That might not be setting the goal, but it's saying the city might not be able to follow through on making up that 40%, because the city doesn't always follow through on things. So if you build what you build and it ends up that it is an 80-20, will the city really come forward and say, oh, well, we agreed to a maximum of 60, so we've got to get more buses, we've got to get more this and whatever to make it 40. So in other words, will the city follow through on its
Good evening, Carly Payne from SFMTA. I would like to suggest a couple of concepts to add to this discussion. One is, if it's 80%, what I can tell you is that the city's going to have a really hard time following through with the roadway capacity to carry those cars. So if we are saying 80% of all trips are driving trips, the things that we're hearing from you and from other members of the community about concerns about traffic congestion on streets like Thielen and other streets, those are only going to get worse. Nothing, in no reality, does that get better if we are doing things to support more driving. Even if we make fixes in the short term to add some more throughput, that quickly gets consumed by what we call latent demand, people who thought, oh, you know, driving's a little harder, so today I'll take the bus. Suddenly traffic's flowing a little smoother, and whoever's suggestion was, why don't you take away the bike lane on Phelan if you're going to put a bike lane as part of the streetway in the reservoir. Suddenly, that new road capacity after 3 years is taken up, and you're still at the slowness and the congestion you had before that change, but now you also don't have the bike lane there, and you've lost that option for people. So we're really, that's also addressing the previous question. The other thing I want to share with you is that the city of San Francisco, multiple agencies collaborated for over 2 years in collecting data at sites throughout San Francisco in different neighborhoods, looking at how the relationship between providing parking on site and driving trips and the choice to drive. And what we found, and this is true of residential as well as non-residential uses, and it's true throughout the city, we looked not just in the downtown but in some of the outer neighborhoods and inner neighborhoods as well, is that when people have dedicated parking spaces on site, they are more likely to drive by a great amount. In fact, people without dedicated parking spaces at their residence are about half as likely, make about 50% fewer driving trips as people who have dedicated parking spaces on site. And this research has now been amplified by findings across the nation that has not only found a relationship but a causality between providing parking on site and choosing to drive. that doesn't mean that the city of San Francisco is saying, okay, you know, we have a transit first policy, nobody can have access to parking, but it really means it, I think, obligates us to take seriously the decision about how much parking to provide for people, understanding that it does induce additional driving trips. And then several of you suggested, you know, if somebody doesn't have on-site parking, won't they just park in my neighborhood? And I think that that's a valid question. I'd also think that there are policy things that you all could recommend, like restricting residential parking permits or saying that people in this site would not be eligible for residential parking permits in the neighboring areas and those kinds of things.
So can I just offer back, just very respectfully?
Yeah.
What you're just saying in some regard validates the TDM conversation we had two meetings ago, which unfortunately feels like our feedback is falling on deaf ears. I don't mean to be disrespectful about this, but there are a couple of challenges with this area because of its historically suburban nature and the fact that because of the combination of, we have five schools within a very small area, and a lot of people have to drive as teachers and park on the streets already. So we experience something already, which I think we kind of can live with kind of as it is, and know that anything that we do will increase that in a way that will then make us, and I think there was a, and I'm going to say this honestly, there was kind of a flippant response by, what was the name of the guy again who was here?
The consultant.
Jeff. I want to call him Noel. Jeff, who said, oh, well, then just put in, you know, the neighborhood parking and just, you know, and just get permits. Our neighborhood doesn't, only little pockets of the neighborhood have permits for specific reasons. And then that's an impact on people that, you know, that's now something we have to pay for that wasn't paid for before. And as we know, when people are used to something, something that's a privilege very quickly becomes an entitlement. And I think one of the things that we were trying to be really careful about is to make sure that as we're talking about this, that we don't have kind of a knee-jerk reaction of, well, we'll just do this or we can just do that. And I think one of the challenges is specifically about this site around the parking is trying to figure out the combination of the needed parking on site for City College, knowing what the population, what the profile looks like, and I think it's probably, I would guess, probably going to be 60 to 70% of students versus 20 to 30%, what that means.
We don't know that.
And then having, for this percentage, the challenge of, let's say you're somebody who's going to be in one of the units, you're part of the percentage of units that's a family unit, and you've got a car, you're going to need to be able to take trips because you have that car to be able to take those trips.
Absolutely. And just to be clear, an auto mode share goal is not the same as what Jeff Tumlin was discussing of a trip cap, which is, and I'll tell you the difference. A trip cap is an absolute cap of, I think what you're getting at, okay, I've expended all my trips, now I'm stuck. An auto mode share goal, it's the share, it's a percentage. So the way I would monitor that is I would do a survey and say, you know, on a snapshot of a day, how did you get here and how are you making your next trip? How did you get here and how did you make your next trip? And then that would be as a percentage of all trips made from the site, whether the total number of trips is 100 or 1,000 is not measured. It's measured, but it doesn't matter towards your auto mode share. What measures is what proportion of those trips is made by auto or non-auto. From a transportation systems perspective, I absolutely understand the appeal of a trip cap because it's a little more certain in that.
Oh, I'm not suggesting.
I know that that's not what you're saying, and so, but from a policy perspective, it's a little more challenging than what I think what is suggested in this document, which we are comfortable with from a transportation network perspective of saying, you know, honestly, our roadways, many of them in the city, are at capacity, and if we want to enable people who really need to drive or feel like on that day they need to drive to get around, we shouldn't be doing things to induce more driving.
Okay.
concept makes sense?
Back to the parameters.
Back, the automobile mode share concept makes sense to the CSU members?
So,
I'd like us to stay focused on the parameters and get the questions answered around the parameters. And I think, so Jeremy, why don't you keep going?
Okay, I have a couple questions and thoughts. And this is this conversation. Okay, so let's just, with regard to the mode share, I think the number is less, if I'm happy to give you more details, but basically the current, there are models that we have out there, and basically the for the future purposes of planning transit, planning streets, and because of those geometric constraints of the streets, we have to figure out other ways to target things like mode share, otherwise no one's going to get anywhere. And so the 60% is very consistent with our 2040 model, and it's not that onerous of a demand. The point was more to set the expectations of the developers that, look, we're looking at mode share, and the first phase, which is a recent edit in that document, out of the gate, we want to make sure you are too. And then based on the development program or the phasing program, how that mode share monitoring and number goes forward is something we can discuss with the TDM staff at planning at SFMTA and sort of come to an agreement on, and then it has to go through environmental review and work. So really it's, the number isn't, not, I hear your comments, it's not so controversial in the sort of mode, the modeling world of things. I mean, just another reference point, the 2012 mode share for the neighborhood, and that's mostly single family homes, because the neighborhood as modeled in this thing is parts of the surrounding single family home. Nowhere else, and City College, which has no housing. So that is 70%. And so having multifamily homes on this reservoir, on the reservoir site, and a mode share of 60%, it's not that onerous of a task. And it's almost the minimum that we need to make sure we hit, to make sure the streets don't get clogged up forever. So I hope that clarifies the idea. I mean, in some cases, when we put numbers in here, we want to send the message to the developer that the city's watching and you need to perform. But it opens up a lot of it's very complicated. But I hope that clarifies. Is there another objection with 2A then, or this conversation is about moving forward with parameters. Like, how can we get it to a point where we're all comfortable with the language in here?
I have one more representative from Westwood Park who would like to.
I just need a clarification, because I think Akil Ito with Westwood Park, what you're speaking about, again, is aspirational. You're trying to change your behavior to 40% use or 60% use of vehicles. What is going on in this neighborhood now? Do you know what Westwood Park residents
that's what
do?
You said. So, yeah, can I answer?
Happy to answer. And again, I try not to make it personal. It's not about changing your behavior. So the current number is 70%, and that's from 2012. Okay, it might be different or likely better now in terms of mode share. And I guess my only point is there is all the room in the world for the existing residents to stay at that level and build the reservoir and still achieve the 60% target. There's a lot, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if you take certain developments around the neighborhood, like on Ocean Avenue as an example, and build parking ratios in the way that we've been discussing, or the way the precedents have, 60% is totally achievable without affecting the existing residents and trip patterns there. So.
And the target applies to the new residents.
Yeah, and the 60,
sorry. Right, but it's still not addressing, with these other concepts of unbundling and whatever, Lisa's point and our concerns about people parking in our neighborhood. It's happening now. We're constantly calling because of that, the 72-hour restrictions. That all is going on.
So one thing I want to highlight about the concern that's been raised about parking in the neighborhoods is, as we're monitoring travel, the person that parks on the site or the person that parks in the neighborhoods, if they're making an auto trip, it'll come back on the survey that Carly said as an auto trip.
And really, the way this is constructed is really developer focused to say, you developer need to find ways to get some level of those people out of their cars, giving them more incentives to use transit, making it more able to do other types of travel for trips that don't need a car. You developer need to go do that and bring it back down so there are fewer cars on the road for the surrounding neighborhoods to deal with. So we're not modifying behavior of anyone here. What we're trying to say is the people that buy into this development, starting with the developer, but then the residents, need to be able to utilize the tools that we're bringing forward through the TDM plan and through this developer negotiation to improve the congestion that's caused by the project. So I think that's what we wanted to clarify about 2A. It's really focused on the developer and saying we all can have our best thinking now, but once things get built, we're kind of stuck with it. We're saying you've got to keep actively figuring out how people are traveling and trying to get them out of their cars and off the roads, including the people that are parking in the neighborhoods.
I have a point on that developer comment just to make, if I may, for 2 seconds. Because
it's nice to state that the developer is going to take care of things, but on the west side, we know the developer just offered $100 for Uber or Lyft for Park Merced. That's what I'm talking about, is that you can say, developer, you're in charge of doing this, but is there any enforceability? Is there any way to backtrack and make them rethink things? You're talking about a developer who's made an agreement with the city. There's a lot of other issues involved there, so.
I just have a question since he brought up Park Merced. In that article, it said they had one-to-one parking.
Can you get up
to
the mic?
Is that, in reference to the Park Merced development, when the incentive, everybody was getting $100. Pardon? I'm sorry.
Identify who you are.
Oh, Carol Ito again. Since Park Merced was brought up, I was just wondering if it was correct in this article. It said they have one-to-one parking plus this developer incentive of $100 per unit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I can address it.
So the Park Merced project has a development agreement that was adopted in, I think, 2011, and it includes a really robust TDM plan that seeks to achieve a one-to-one parking ratio so that, you know, on average, residents can have one car and then they can use other modes to get around. And so maybe, again, a smaller proportion of their trips happen in their car. That is like a set program that they negotiated with the city that's been agreed to since 2011. They decided independently on that, above and beyond, to add this Uber credit. So it's not an either or, it's kind of a both that this one development decided to do.
So
Jeremy was responding to questions about the parameters to because we've got to clarify what are the things we still need to work on these principles. So I think, do you have any other questions of that nature?
Not of that nature, but
okay.
we can propose some suggestions.
Okay, right. And do you have a clarifying question?
I just wanted to say, I just threw out that 80%. I actually never seriously even read this. I understand what auto mode share is, but to me it just seems like a policy statement that could be used to justify low parking. It could be used to say, oh, what's the easiest way to have a high or lower the auto mode share? Just have less parking spaces for there to be cars. That's why I think there's some concern about that parameter, is that because it's just policy and it could be used to justify less parking spaces.
May I respond
to that? Thanks, Carly Payne from SFMT again. You know, we've looked at auto mode share targets and other kinds of performance targets in development agreements in San Francisco for a number of years. And one of the things that's appealing to neighbors is that it actually performs like a commitment to the neighborhood of here's how this development is going to function. That regardless of what is in the specific TDM plan at adoption, there's a commitment from the developer and then the subsequent property owner a property manager, that if these things don't work, we still have a commitment to you, the surrounding community, and to the city, who is responsible for making transportation work and keeping people moving, that this project is not going to, if we say it's only going to have 60% auto mode share, we're not going to, you know, go sell our units and then suddenly it's got 80% and sorry, too bad for you. It's really a commitment to the neighborhood about how it's going to perform. And so I invite you to think about how you want this project or this development site to perform in terms of trip, how much it's generating auto trips on and traffic in your neighborhood. And to me, that's the framework for thinking about an auto mode share goal.
So I wonder if we could just put something clarifying within that percentage that says, you know, based upon whatever the ratio is, doing a cross-reference to the parking ratio, saying so to prevent that from being the case, to be able to, like, to be able to game it, right? So my point is that if it reads as it's not clear, let's just make it clear by saying specifically what this is, particularly if the fact is that, you know, the developer may know what this is, but for the layperson who goes online and clicks on this and reads this, it might be worth putting a definition of what this means, and then to say that this is separate from anything related to a parking ratio, that this is specifically about the number of trips per car based on the percentage of cars that will be at the site. Mm-hmm.
Can she clarify, or can you clarify how is that enforced? She said that the developer.
So what we've done in the past, and we can share with you some past examples to work off of, is also as part of a development agreement have a monitoring and compliance component, and monitoring can be things from, I think the most standard is some amount of surveying, direct surveying, whether it's intercept surveys or something like that, intercept being like I'm standing at the entrance to buildings and stopping every third person or something like that, as well as total counts of people coming in and out to get your auto mode share of all your trips. And then having a reputable entity do that so that it's a third party, it's either the city or a third party doing that, it's not on the developer or the property owner who has a stake in what the outcome is. And then reporting that to the city, and if those performance metrics or targets are not being complied with, the first step is generally let's work together to figure out what's not going well and make some tweaks, give you a chance to come into compliance, and then the subsequent steps are fines. Fines to the developer. So for instance, for Treasure Island development, they have a 50% auto mode share maximum, that's the goal. And if they are not in compliance, there's a step to work with the city. And then if they still can't get into compliance, then they have to pay $1 million to the city for transportation purposes for every year for 5 years. That's kind of an example.
But that does seem like it would be a cumbersome process if we neighbors say, hey, all these people are parking on neighborhoods, so we don't have this mode share that you're talking about. You know,
so it's not complaint-based. I know that many things in the planning code are enforced through the complaints. This is set up where every year they have to do their monitoring and reporting. So
it's a requirement.
It's a requirement. And then the city has enforcement staff, and the planning department actually just recently added a monitoring and reporting staff person, has two more people in the budget for this coming year to make sure that developments really are following through with these kinds of things. Exactly.
I thought that you said that it was up to the city, has their part in making sure that these things are met as well. Or did I misunderstand that?
So the monitoring goes to, and reporting happens to the city.
When if, if performance, the criteria is not met, there could be fines. But I thought you said that the city has their responsibility to make sure that these the criteria is met also.
Because you have to provide the buses and the whatever the truck, the alternate.
So
part of their program is, I think in a transportation development agreement, it would articulate assumptions about service and things like that.
Okay.
But maybe I'm not.
So that's, I think it's subjective. If the city's doing everything they can and the developer isn't, or and who makes those decisions? Is it the same body that analyzes? It seems it's
that. Well, I think that we might not answer this fully today, because if you've ever looked at a development agreement, it's there are hundreds of pages long. I think the point may be that it's an agreement between both entities, and there are different responsibilities that fall on both parties. So most of the data needs to be monitored. It's usually in an agreement that the developer's on the hook for monitoring the data, generating data, doing surveys, doing the analysis, and then they bring it to the city to say, hey, we are complying, or this is how we are complying, or in the case that we're not, this is what we're going to do to fix it. So it's sort of both. I don't know if we need to answer every question. I don't know if like we can get every measure, like, but I'm happy to talk more about that after. But
so Jeremy, I'd like to get us focused back on the recommendations back,
so
on the principles.
Yeah. Can I make a couple?
Yeah.
It's okay if they're gone.
Yep.
So we I think with regard
to
Christina's
coming back, but okay. I think we've lost more.
Yeah, we have 10, 4, 5.
So we're barely at quorum, so.
Okay, yeah, that's
that's
what it is. But so I think if we can add clarification language to 2A to help readers understand what we mean by AMS.
Good idea.
Okay, and we're more than happy to do that. It makes all the sense in the world. So you do that, and then we're looking at 3B, and it seems like there we agree it's really hard to find a number, right? We know that there are certain minimum requirements. We want families to have one space. We put that in there. We don't want to change that, but what if we remove this last clause about the overall ratio? Because there are so many variables still up in the air about how many family units, how many student units, how many affordable units, with all sorts of different requirements and different demands from different angles. Would it be a path forward if we struck that last clause from the parameter 3B, the last sentence, the overall site parking ratio should be no greater than 0.5, and then just like with most of the parameters, just look to the developer to propose solutions and see what they propose.
Yeah.
And then start the dialogue with the community, remember that little box, that way. And say, hey, this is what the developer came back. They know the market better than we do. They know the city and all our parking and transportation sort of expectations. Let's see what bubbles up and what kind of solution before we pin down a number. Is that a reasonable path forward if we...
I would rather we... kept the 0.5, but made it aspirational is the word of the evening tonight. I'd like to keep the 0.5, but I would be willing to make it more aspirational. So the overall site parking ratio should be no greater. What already is, it said it should be no greater. It doesn't say shall be no more any greater. I mean, I would like to keep at least.
We should aim to have a 0.5 ratio.
That's kind of what it says, but yeah.
We can call it a goal or a target.
Yeah.
I mean, again,
But I think your point is well taken, because I was sitting here trying to calculate the math to say, let's say you have 400 units. And 100 of them are two bedroom, so that's 100 parking spaces. And then you've got the studio units, and maybe 50 of them you park. Like, you start to do the math, it's really, really hard to put a target toward it, because it's dependent upon what the mix is going to be. So I think the intention I think the spirit of the principle is to provide the right amount of parking for the program as will be designed. to meet the diverse needs of the different type of housing stock. And
yes.
I think that that's the way to frame it.
Yes.
But overall.
Pardon, I mean, yes, the right amount, which, again, who knows at this point, and also it has to do with all the other TDM measures.
Yep.
If there are 100% coverage for transit passes for X number of households, that's going to affect a lot. And so we want those solutions to come together from the developer and, again, also work with the housing program. And so, I mean, the idea, the reason why it was should or why it was put in there in the first place is to, again, set the developer's expectations and really minimize congestion. Because as we've maybe said before, it's the one of the biggest influencers of whether people drive is if there's free parking, if there's parking. And so that was the provenance of the number. But we'd like to find a way that we can move forward and get start identifying solutions. So I don't know.
Well, just to use the metaphor of the Petri dish, if we add too many parking spots, if we have an oversupply of parking, we could possibly end up with too much traffic. We could end up with gridlock. And, you know, I mean, it works in both directions. And you could have a fatal undersupply of parking and have all sorts of other problems. Got to get the balance right. You know.
It could always be Plan B parking for City College.
Okay, so that was a side comment. That wasn't general.
But actually, the one other issue is the City College replacement parking.
City College, what? Parking.
Replacement parking.
Yeah.
Or parking replacement.
Right, and so we're hoping that the parameters in the City College section address that and the other illusions. Huh?
It's in here too.
And it's in here too.
Yeah, both of them. Yeah. They're designed concurrently. So
you
what
other things you want to provide to us?
Those were the two major ones.
Yeah,
was there any, I mean, we heard.
So what I'd like to propose is to do a revise of the principles based upon what you just articulated and then be able to do a consensus vote at the beginning of the next meeting because I feel that this is a very important one and I feel like we need to have more than five of us here to take the consensus vote. I know that's not ideal because I know we're trying to get through things, but I feel particularly with this one because we all... This is a hot topic, and it needs to be something that we need to, as a CAC, and as the chair in the leadership position, I think it's really important that we're all really well aligned around this because it's going to be really important as we move forward, particularly when we get to that box of the development, right, of what it's going to look like and so on. This is helping us to get there.
Is there any way we could understand what the wording will be tonight?
Well, let me ask.
You know, it's 7 minutes to nine, so I'm actually going to call.
Okay.
I'd like this because we're already over on time,
okay.
And so I want to.
We will wordsmith. I just want to make sure to reflect to be able to address the CAC's concerns. Were there any? We heard a lot. We took notes, and we will add everything to the minutes. Was there anything more specific in the parameters that besides those two major changes to 2A and 3B? That we should focus on for this next round of revisions? Because we heard a lot, right? But I didn't hear anything else specific.
You know, I think understanding the role of Muni and MTA, like I think that needs to be called out a little bit more strategically. I mean, we just had a little conversation back and forth about, well, they'll do this piece, we'll do this piece. So the notion of the coordination of how to work together, I think, is important. And I think Harry's point about being clear about in the cover piece about the TDM plan, being more specific about the kind of inputs. I think we probably should add a paragraph that is something that's off of the slide you did, which actually lays out for people to understand the input piece versus the actual development of the TDM would be helpful. I know that's not part of the principal parameter, but it's the precursor to it, and I think that would be helpful.
Lisa, could I ask one
quick
related question? What I see here is some uncertainties because we don't know what people's behavior will be. We don't know if, you know, should you not have people move into a unit because they will have a car and that would upset the balance. One thing I'm not clear about being here is if it's determined that there would be too much congestion, is it as one of the variables we need to reduce by some percentage the number of units in the development. You know, to force that equation.
Well, I think there's a point in there which is about phase one being the test to figure out how it's going to work, right? That was the intention, was to have phase one be the petri dish. Is that that was my sense of what that language was supposed to get to.
Just yeah.
So that was to do with mode share. I think the larger point is, as part of that community engagement, further environmental review piece, the actual land plan will be evaluated against things like vehicle miles traveled to get at the point of, can we even do this?
Yeah.
And at that point, as part of project approvals, we'll have that data in front of us to understand whether or not we're saying yes to this. So it doesn't make sense to put in the parameters something that's going to happen. The developer is going to propose the number of units and all the things that go around it to make those units work, and we'll have to evaluate that as a community and whether that works.
I have one other piece of feedback around principle 3A about the unbundling.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we can change the language around the unbundling. So, you know, this notion of you know, you don't want to be like a military state, but to be able to have some understanding of if you're moving into the union and you have a car, like there's.
Can we clarify something before?
Yeah, sure.
This is already part of the planning code. So the idea of unbundling was written in there as a message, as a tool to communicate with people reading this, but it's already on the books, so it's not something
it's not
we
negotiable.
Cannot not do.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the way all projects are these days.
Okay. So is it all unbundled?
All the project spaces? Citywide.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Well, that answers that question. Okay. So for our next meeting, give me a second, I gotta get some other page of notes. So our next meeting is gonna be June 13th. Same building, same time, same bat channel. And we have three parameters to cover potentially, because they're not as controversial, is sustainability, the public realm, and additional public benefits. Those are the last three. So what will happen is we will start off with this item, just like we did tonight, and see the edits and upgrades to the principles based on tonight's feedback, and then we'll do a consensus vote on that. And then we'll move into the three that are remaining, and ideally be able to take a consensus vote on those. And I think also at that meeting, we'll probably begin to talk a little bit about what's next, because that will be a big hurdle. So I think that's it, and yes?
I just wanted to ask, could you be sure, or could we, for next meeting, have general comment first, so that the general comment period, because a lot of times at the meetings, general comment period gets dropped, and then it doesn't happen at the next meeting. And if the next meeting is real busy again, there won't be a general comment section. So could that be first, next meeting?
So the one thing about the general comment section is that we're deep into these principles now, and we're really trying to have people's comments be limited to what we're talking about so we can get through the agenda. We can try to put it at the beginning, but it puts us at a disadvantage then of getting through the principles.
You can email us.
We,
it goes,
you know,
on the record.
We can go back and do it and put a time on it and say it's going to be 15 minutes, hard stop at 15 minutes. But just know that, I appreciate the faces in the audience. I feel like I know everybody's name now because you guys are the diehards that are here and are really a part of this process. And I, you know, just as we get thanked for leading, I thank you for all being here and being committed and passionate and really caring and putting in a lot of time beyond your own busy lives to be a part of this. So the intention of it was more about just trying to really drill down and have the comments be focused and not having people come and just talk about things in general that we've heard 50 times, right? So we kind of know what the issues are. But we can bring it back to the agenda. I'm making eye contact with you and Philip at the same time. We can try to put it on the agenda first and see where we put it for 15 minutes and see what we get. Yeah.
You've heard them 50 times because it seems that the staff often is not responding to those very.
No, I've heard 50 times that City College students are single mothers who need to be able to drive a car. I think we have all heard that and we now know it. And when we go to public comment, someone will get up and we'll say that again. So that's, those are the comments I'm thinking about. Not,
you miss
okay, you can agree to disagree. Okay, so with that, thank you all very much. Good night.
Is everybody still aware? Tomorrow night is the Balboa Park Station CAC. We still need people for seats 2, 4, and 7. If anybody's interested, because that would have been a public.